Welcome to In Conversation With from Devon Chamber. Supported by Westcott's Chartered Accountants and Business Advisors. Presented by Stuart Elford. Recorded at Fresh Air Studios in Plymouth.
Hi there, I'm Stuart Elford, Chief Executive of Devon Chamber of Commerce, with another edition of our In Conversation With podcast. And today I'm joined by someone who's arguably world famous, who's originally from Plymouth. Don't laugh, it's true. But if I told you just his name, some of you may not recognise it. However, if I told you that he'd won Grammy and Brit Awards, had sold 11 million records worldwide, had the UK's most streamed song of all time with over 26.6 million plays.
Was it?
It was. And was from the band Bastille, you may just recognise Chris Woody Wood. Welcome, Woody. Is that how I call you, Woody?
Please.
Because your dad's Woody as well, isn't he?
He is, yeah. Well,
sort of.
Yeah, I mean, some of his mates, I've heard them call him that.
Woody.
I've hijacked it, though, well and truly.
Yeah, so I met your dad at the Fair Share Southwest charity.
Yes.
And he does look, and we're going to come back to that in a minute, but you're a Devon lad.
I am, yes. Grew up in Plymouth, family's from here. Yeah, went to DHS for boys.
Yep. So did I. I didn't know that. I think you're just a smidge younger than me. Just a smidge.
Yeah. Camera filters, it's fine.
Yeah.
Going way back, it doesn't exist anymore. Went to Langley Infant School, Junior School in Safeway. Okay. And then, went to DHS.
Wow. So you really are a Plymouth lad.
This is it.
So what got you into music? Were you one of Trevor Farrow's proteges?
I had Trev, yeah. I had Trev.
He was the music teacher, for those who don't know.
Yes,
as I'm talking about as if everyone knows Trev Farrow is.
It was, it's largely from Dad, really. So Dad is still a guitarist and singer, in the area. He's out gigging more than me at the minute. He's a busy boy. Yeah, he's at least 2 or 3 gigs a week. Hungry Bears, if anyone wants to book them.
Hungry Bears?
Yes.
What sort of music are they?
Do a mixture of originals and covers. When it's the cover stuff, it's all kind of accessible things like Pink Floyd, Beatles, Stones. They will ram your pub to the rafters, I promise, whichever camera it is. Yeah.
Good plug. And he deserves a plug because he's been incredibly kind, first of all, at working with us on Fair Share and the Chamber's working with them to try and do stuff with them, but also in a nice possible way getting access to you, because I'm sure if it wasn't for your dad, I wouldn't have a world-famous musician on the show. So when did you think music could be a career for you? Because if you went to Dunbar High, it's renowned as quite an academic school.
It was at the time.
They wanted you to be a solicitor or an accountant or something.
I will give special praise to, I believe his head of sixth form at the time, Mr. Stark. As you say, DHS, I've actually gone back to the school since. I've done a few drum things and talking to musicians, what have you. It's changed a lot now. It's a lot more sort of arts focused now as well.
Is
but
it right?
At the time, it was very academic. Oxbridge was the ultimate
the goal
for everyone.
Yeah.
But I was sort of, as my grades probably reflected, academia wasn't really my true calling. Yeah.
Yes.
But yeah, so I was sort of flirting with the idea of going to a music college up in Guildford, and Mr. Stark was basically the only one on the side was like, I know everyone here says you should be doing this, but if that's what you want to do, boy, just go and go for it. Okay. So yeah, kind of getting the approval of him helped. That wasn't the only reason. But I was playing in bands in school from the age of 13. In fact, my first gig was by accident. Dad was playing with one of his other bands, and this is in the days of when not everyone had mobile phones, and I would have been 12, 13. Went with Dad to watch his gig, and I was just sort of sat watching everyone set up, and they were starting at 9 o'clock. Gets to about 8:30. It's like, where's Rog, the drummer? He's not here. So someone ran out, rang his house. His missus picks up. He's like, is Rog on the way? He's like, nah, he's gone to Tesco's. I'm like, ah. So no way of reaching him. So then one of Dad's mates took me back to our house in his car, got my 100 quid dodgy starter drum kit, shoved it in the back, and they were already starting the gig without a drummer. I just set up in the middle of the pub and just went, no practice, nothing.
Can you do that?
It was sink or swim. I just about kept my head above water.
This is genuinely true. I had a nightmare because I did play the drums literally for a few weeks.
Yeah.
And I didn't carry on, which I regret to this day. But I had an actual nightmare that I was on stage and I was ready to play and then realised, but I can't actually play. I don't know what I'm doing, you know? Do you ever get nervous? You're facing a big crowd. Do you ever think, am I going to stuff this up? Or are you just in the zone and it all happens?
There's a very abridged version of the history of the band. If you're on an upward trajectory, a steady one at that, as we were very fortunate to be sort of around 2013-14, by the time you're playing a gig, say here, your sort of status is probably here, so you could be playing there, but it takes, say, 6 months to book the next gig, if that makes sense. So the venue is always a little bit smaller than what you're capable of doing.
Okay, because you're on an upward. Yeah.
So rather than being overawed by oh my God, how are we going to fill this? It's this is rand. It's really exciting. So you feel overly confident almost at the time. But I mean, I say that. Will, our bass player, also like me, he's like a musician since school. He's very confident. The other two, not so full of the joys
right.
of life. And
they
get anxious about some stuff. But it's the more you do it. And for any musicians watching, I would say that practice. The people who are good play it till they can play it right. People who are pro play it till they can't play it wrong.
Okay.
So
muscle memory almost. It's just
hugely, which, as you say, about a sort of a waking nightmare. We had that when we did Isle of Wight Festival for the first time. First time playing on live TV. And we play with these like in-ear monitors. So like there's like no speakers on stage, just these like personal headphones. We could hear what we're doing. Unbeknownst to us, someone had handed the wireless codes. So we want all these individual little wireless belt packs. They're given the identical frequencies to the next band on after us.
Oh.
And we learned the hard way, midway through a song, live on Sky. If some competing bits of gear are turned on the same frequency, they cancel each other out. So we were instantly deaf.
Right.
Like mid-song.
So you just had to keep going.
We did, but mercifully, Ben Kingman, our monitor engineer from Truro, actually, good lad, he realised straight away what it was, did the sort of like running Superman dive, yanked all the cables out from the other band's gear, and we came back to life in like 8 seconds, but that 8 seconds felt like 8 years, like my world just dropped out from underneath
me.
We were like, oh my God. But muscle memory, as mentioned before.
You just carried on.
Yeah, like everyone's digits went to where they should go. Yeah, arms went to the right place, and no one out front really clocked. But you'd have seen the sort of like colour drain from all our faces simultaneously.
I'll bet. Yeah, well, Anthony Hopkins, the actor, says, so he said, if you have to think about the lines, you can't act the lines.
Yeah.
So he reads them over and over and over and over again. So like you say, he couldn't get the line wrong. He can think about how he's going to deliver the line.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess.
Similarly with like pro footballers, whatever, like anyone who's like proficient in a certain skill, if I'm playing a drum beat, I'm not thinking bass drum, snare drum, do it. I'm thinking that I know how it sounds.
I was very much in the former category,
yeah.
Trying to get your limbs to move in different directions when
yeah.
you start is
again,
it's not right.
Again, muscle memory's in there. So then eventually I end up just getting bored and trying to pull dad faces to put the bass player off.
Right, okay,
very
fair
mature.
Enough. Yeah, that's all right. So you mentioned you were on this upward trajectory. So where did you all meet? Was it school, university, on the music scene? How did you all get together?
Technically the music scene. Dad loves this story because he helped me. I'd finished music college. I'd moved home for like 3 months to basically save money up to move to London. Worked in a call centre job for some wine company, which is terrible, but whatever. Anyway, moved to London, put down my deposit, first month's rent, instantly skint, because that was all the money gone.
Yeah.
And then I was working temp jobs in the day and then trying to do music by night. So essentially doing two things at once, that was sort of killing me. It was just like there was no sleep involved. So dad was like, well, you need to think of a way of making money from music, like to sustain yourself. He's like, what about teaching drums? I was like, I could do that. So a friend of mine locally from here, Paul Dupree, made me a flyer. And me and dad went around Wimbledon, where I was at the time. And we did about, I don't know, 1,000 flyers around the area. 1,000 flyers, 3 phone calls, 2 for students, and 1 for this weird kid who's about 3 roads away. And that was Dan.
Dan, the singer.
Yeah, who had like just moved back from uni. He was doing sort of like more like obscure, like solo stuff at the time.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm putting a band together. And he called me thinking I was going to be some old boy. Like, have you got any students you can recommend? I was like, nah, dude, I'm like 21. I'll be in the band.
Yeah.
So yeah, met him in the Wetherspoons. And then from there, we went around for like 2 years under his name, not doing Bastille songs because they weren't written then. And we sort of picked up the band as we went just on the scene. So it all kind of like formed like fairly organically.
And then the name Bastille, where did that come from?
Dan's birthday, born on Bastille Day.
Was he?
Yeah.
Right. I was wondering. I did quite a bit of research for this and I didn't find that. So, okay.
He cool. just loves birthday cards, you see. It's just a big reminder.
Yeah. So it seemed to, well, certainly me and the rest of the world, that you became famous overnight. What was the transition like for you guys?
Not at all for us. We put in so much graft. Well, for those first 2 years under Dan's name, it sort of appeared, I guess, from outside that we came out of nowhere. But we'd done all the groundwork then, playing to no one, staying on friends of friends' floors, but meeting like pluggers, agents, radio people, lawyers as you go. Sorry, music lawyers, which are quite an important part of the industry as well. Their little black books are just bottomless.
Oh, right, okay.
So we did all the sort of groundwork and then Kyle joined us, our keys player. He's a sort of missing fourth person. And then we went away one summer. Dan had the first batch of songs that became the first Bastille songs. And then we sort of like relaunched spring of 2011. And our first gig was Great Escape in Brighton, which is a big festival for new music. So everyone's like, who the hell are these guys? Like the room was full. So from the outside, it's like, this is the random thing that's just blown up. We'd done all the groundwork before.
Right.
So then we were touring for best part of 2 years with a record deal and stuff before Pompeii like became this global monster that we ended up chasing for two or 3 years.
Well, I was going to say, so Pompeii, it's anthemic. Everyone knew it. And as I said in the introduction, became the UK's most streamed song, 26.6 million plays. Can you believe that? 26.6 million.
I'm thinking mum and dad must have had it on repeat for quite a while on a few devices.
No,
but
it is anthemic. When you first played it, did you think, this is good? This is going to...
No, no one did. Anyone who says that they did is lying. We've heard it before. Some people will stay nameless, will say like, oh, the first time I heard it, I shed a tear. I just knew. Lies. Everyone thought the single before was going to blow. And
okay.
It did okay. But then no one saw this coming. After the fact, everyone loves to rewrite history a little bit.
Yeah, well, that's all right. I have this image that if you get one good anthemic song. That's you set up for life. That's your pension. If you hear it on the radio, does a cash register ring? Do you suddenly think there's going to be thousands of pounds arriving through the post?
There's going to be thousands of pence.
Yeah. Really? Okay. So you haven't got a Rolls Royce parked outside?
Alas, no. No. Not yet. We've done all right. So, I mean, as a sort of a music business thing, all the power financially will be the people who, like, actually write the music. So Dan is the main writer in the band and turns out he's pretty good at it. But then I'm also working in that world now as well with other artists, which is actually quite fun as well. So the joy of that is you kind of meet up for a day, make this brand new thing that didn't exist in the morning, and then you leave at the end of the day having made new friends and a new song, and then they can go and tour it and you haven't got to do any of the work. But every time it gets played...
You're good
used,
enough.
Yeah.
So Pompeii hits, suddenly it's everywhere, you're being streamed, you're appearing. What did that feel like? Do you remember the first time you were recognised when someone saw you? Because I read in the paper while I was doing my research that you say you only ever get recognised at Argyle.
Yeah, I'm world famous at Argyle.
that's it.
Which is great. I mean, that's the position you want. I mean, I'd say most people these days, unless they're hardcore fans, only really know like frontmen. I mean, I've seen Guy from Coldplay, the biggest band on earth, he's a bass player, walking down Carnaby Street on a Saturday afternoon and no one looks twice. No. It's like, he's got it nailed. So complete anonymity when he's at home and then gets to be a rock star for his job.
That is the dream, isn't it? Because people think, I'd like to be rich and famous. I'd like to be rich and anonymous because with fame, someone's sticking a camera in your face, everything you do, everything you say.
Yeah. Also, what's helpful is like, I think the band as an entity and the name and the sound is like, that's the famous bit. Like, we as people aren't necessarily that well known, which is great.
And I don't think, you tell me I'm wrong, that any of you have courted that.
No, we've actually intentionally tried to avoid it, if anything.
Yeah, yeah.
There are some people who will play the game. And also, like, maybe it's been to our detriment in terms of numbers. Maybe we could be bigger. We could be doing stadiums now, but I quite like my life.
I think you probably, it's a good trade-off that you've made because it must be really intrusive. And I mean this with respect. I haven't found a hint of scandal about Bastille or anyone in it, or there's no horrible stories, unless you tell me that you've managed to hide them all very well.
No, we've some very powerful lawyers. No. We never really courted it, to be honest. And then, like, most of us have been with the same partners since the band started. I mean, I've been married 10 years last year. And yeah, we've been really vanilla and boring.
Well, I'm sure it's not, but I'm going to come back to funny of your personal life and other stuff. So you've toured the world with Bastille. There must be a wild, funny thing you can say about what's happened on the road. There must be moments which are incredible.
That Pompeii period especially, there were things that happened to us, say, like four times in a week, which if they happened like once in a year, you'd be like, oh my God, that's mental. It's almost like a waste. There's like so many crazy things happened in such a compressed period of time. You don't get a chance to process it, but like... We're all nerds. Like, we've now got friends at NASA. So we often go for like tours and stuff around there, either in Florida or in Texas.
For you
Well, as in, we have to ask permission and go do a lot of security checks. But yeah, I mean.
But you can because you're Bastille.
Yeah. NASA's a government agency. They aren't allowed to advertise, but they've had a bunch of funding pooled. So they actually want people like us coming in to shout about it and say, we're still doing tours. So people can go to NASA, they can go and do guided tours. So here's my plug for NASA.
No, I'm with you. So I went to Kennedy, Cape Canaveral.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was one of the best tours I've ever had. And even the gift shop they had was amazing.
I
got the mug with NASA, get with the program on it. I mean, that's cool, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. It's opened doors for you. And what about that feeling when you go out on stage? What's the biggest gig you've played?
Rock in Rio in 22. That was about 175,000. Or something.
Holy moly.
But so when you get beyond a certain size, it doesn't look real anymore. Like, it could be a million before you know. It's like, yeah, it's just impossible. But
that must be a hell of a feeling when you hear that cheer for you guys and your song.
The craziest one was 2014 Rock Vecta. My Flemish is terrible, but in Belgium, where, as I mentioned earlier, that period of like, where you get booked for something when you're here, but if you're on this trajectory, you can be there. So we were on an earlier slot on the main stage. So we were booked for that before Pompeii blew up. And then it had blown, so we could have gone higher up. So basically all the festival was there to watch us. You could see the crowd going back so far, you could see the delay in the speed of sound reaching them. So they were jumping like a wave.
Like a wave.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was just sort of playing like, what is going on?
Because I'm told that playing a stadium is actually really difficult because of that and setting up the sound and everything.
That sounds awful, yeah, yeah.
One of the best gigs I ever went to, and I can say, because I've not sadly seen Bastille yet. I'm sure I will.
Give it time.
I saw REM at Cardiff Arms Park, 1995, and they were supported by the Cranberries.
Yeah.
Just as the Cranberries were about to...
take off, yeah.
Well, they were just taking off. I think Zombie had just gone absolutely nuts. And the Cranberries were amazing, like absolutely brilliant.
On it,
You just knew they were going to be really big and special. But Dolores O'Riordan, and they'll have to bleep this bit out, but she said, apparently I heard her interviewed on the radio afterwards, that's the first stadium gig they'd ever done. And she said, in her Irish accent, which I can't do very well, but she said, does that sound all right down there? And we were like, yeah, she said, because it sounds picked up here. And she said they were really struggling with that. They weren't used to playing in the day because it was the warm-up, so it was still light. Yeah. The light was different, the sound was different, and they said they didn't feel comfortable. We thought it was amazing.
So we've done a handful of stadiums as an opener. So we opened up for Muse in 2013.
Oh, yeah.
Grew up being a big fans of anyway. And again, in the daytime, we're playing the Emirates, the Arsenal Stadium, and going through a song. And bear in mind, I'm a drummer, I'm on a stool, I'm static, I can't move. Going through a song, at the corner of my eye, I just see this thing like arcing through the air towards me. It's like, oh no, what's that? This chocolate muffin hit the edge of the cymbal on my head and just exploded. Just like,
covered
just,
in chocolate muffin.
Yeah. Which I was very glad it wasn't like a warm pint. That'd be much worse.
I know what you're talking about when you say a warm pint. Yes.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of that, isn't there? God.
The conversation continues shortly, but first, the 60-second charity pitch.
Hiya, I'm David Fenduno from the Plymouth Hope Charity, based in Plymouth. We work with children, young people and vulnerable adults from different backgrounds, but primarily focusing on migrant populations and people living around the city centre area and PL4 areas. We're looking for volunteers and supporters to join the charity and give us a lot of support so we can do what we do best. One of the events we run in Plymouth is the Plymouth Hope Festival that happens every year. We're looking for volunteers. You can go on our website, find out more details about it. It's an event that brings simply people together, celebrating diversity and togetherness through food, sport, music, art from around the world, just to make sure we in Plymouth can live together. There's cohesion among different communities, regardless of your social background and where you come from. Thank you.
Follow Devon Chamber on X at @chamber_Devon and search for us on LinkedIn. Make sure you don't miss out on future episodes. Hit subscribe now. In Conversation With, supported by Westcott's Chartered Accountants and Business Advisors. Now, back to the conversation.
You mentioned, so you've met a couple of famous people. Who's the most famous person you think you've met?
When we did SNL, Saturday Night Live, at Pompey's Peak, that was like hosted by Jonah Hill. They had like DiCaprio was on there.
Oh, right.
We're not that bothered about famous people, except, so like we're generally quite unfazed by that sort of thing. The one time we lost our cool and turned into a bunch of giggling like schoolboys was Steve Coogan, aka Alan Partridge.
Of course.
We were so not cool.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, have you met any of your heroes? Have any of them kind of lived up to your expectations, or is it just, hey, they're just another musician?
Yeah, I mean, it's the ones that have already made it and are quite established. Obviously, it's not a hard and fast rule, but often have nothing to prove. Yeah.
So they're nicer.
There isn't much ego.
Yeah. So you didn't have a rider that said, M&M's with the brown one was removed, or whatever it was that these people allegedly have.
Do you know why that was a thing?
No.
So that was Van Halen. It sounds very kind of like ostentatious or just like someone's ego is getting stroked, but it's really a safety measure because their technical rider, which involved like loads of pyro and all that sort of stuff, was like very complicated. And if it went wrong, someone could get hurt. So
test.
If there's brown M&M's here, I bet you they haven't read the rider right. So then they would go and double check everything.
I'm so glad that you told me that because I never knew what that was about.
Yeah.
I've heard stories about, I won't diss any particular singer, but I heard of one who was a bit of a prima donna and she wanted white sofas, white cats.
I know who that is.
You know exactly what I'm talking about. And yet, very rare that anyone shares a rider, but this particular presenter was so fed up that this person had been such a diva, they actually said this is what she'd asked for. And yet they said Sting, you know, one of the most famous people on the planet, and his just said a bottle of water would be nice. And that's all he expected. And I think that says something about him, doesn't it?
He's an absolute sweetheart. I'm very happy to say friend of the band, Rick Astley. He came and did a couple gigs with us at Hampton Court a few years ago. His fee was a bottle of red wine.
He said,
I can't do it for a bottle of red. It's like, great.
Brilliant. What I hope it was a good one.
I think it was, yeah.
Yeah. So we talked about fame and what have you, but do you really not get recognised apart from Argyle?
What's nice is that people are quite respectful. There's been some times where, say, we've done the signing tent at Reading, people queue up and then someone goes up, like, oh, do you live in Brighton? I was like, yeah, I do, yeah. It's like, I thought I recognised you, but I saw your two-year-old going mental in the buggy, so I thought I'd leave you alone, like trying to calm him down at the time.
So it wasn't what you thought it was, being recognised?
Yeah.
No, not about being from a band. I love that story about Matt Damon walking through Hyde Park with his wife, and a young foreign couple were there and looked at him and did photo symbol, and he's like, oh, yeah, all right. So he stood there, put his arm around the guy's wife, and he's like, what are you doing? I just wanted you to take our photo. Like,
sorry.
And he just assumed they knew who he was. So the rock and roll lifestyle, does it live up to cliche, or is it all early nights and herbal tea for you now?
It's a lot more sensible now. I mean, in the early days, you just don't know how long this is going to last. Like,
so you enjoy
it. We thought we could be a flash in the pan. So it's like, you've got to make every night count sort of thing. Now it's like, it's a lot more established. So Yeah, we still have fun. Also, like, we've got a job to do as well. If you're waking up hanging every day and it's a nightmare for like voices, especially like with like singers, people have traveled, they paid money for hotels, for flight. I mean, some people follow us like, across the whole US.
Yeah.
They're spending ungodly sums. Yeah, yeah. So we've got a responsibility to them. Obviously, if someone gets ill, that's one thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you're doing just like kind of self-damage every night.
It's a job, yeah. A friend went to see Amy Winehouse at Eden.
Yeah.
And said she came out to do a sound check. They got there really early and she said it was amazing. Like, her voice was incredible. They thought, this is just going to be brilliant. By the time she got on stage, she could barely stand up.
Yeah.
And was slurring and couldn't remember the words. And I feel terrible for her. I'm not criticizing her.
Yeah.
What a terrible tragedy that was, because she was a musical genius. She was amazing. But for the fans, that was just so disappointing. So,
in the defense of people who do lean into that lifestyle, though, I include myself in this, you rarely meet anyone normal in music. Someone's got to be like a creative.
Oh, yeah.
You have to have something to say. And often it's like, maybe you can't say it. So that's where you start making art. And yeah. That's your outlet. So maybe there's other aspects of your life where like you get very anxious on stage. People drink to get through it.
She was apparently terribly anxious.
Yeah.
Really awkward. I saw a video of her in her very early days doing one of her first gigs on stage. And she looked so awkward. Like her movements, she couldn't dance. The speaking bit between songs, she was fumbling her words. But when she opened her mouth, oh my God.
Yeah,
brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely.
And a genius room, lyricist as well. Yeah.
But also, like, it's not just being on tour, it's almost the off tour is the more dangerous bit. It's like you have that high every night of like the crowd and like the adrenaline. When you come off tour, I mean, I know it happened to so many people where it's like 11 o'clock in the morning, like pub? Yeah, go pub.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
People fall down that very easy trap.
Yeah, yeah. I can absolutely believe that, because that must be, come on, tell us, that must be something when you walk out on stage and, as you say, 170,000 people, is it? If they cheer.
Yeah.
That's got to be one of the biggest like ego boosts in the world.
Never gets old.
No.
Never ever.
But it doesn't seem like you've let it go to your head?
I hope not.
Well, some people it does, doesn't it? You get these divas who then think that they are something.
I'll tell you what was quite humbling was we did the 10-year anniversary tour for the first album, Summer of 23. And I was like, we should do a pre-show playlist in between bands, put it at the front, of like either bands that we've supported during that period or supported us since, or songs that are big, basically like around that era. And what started out as a playlist ended up being more like a sort of kill list. It was like, oh my God, they're gone, they're gone, they're gone.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like, we're really fortunate to like just still be standing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like so many bands who like for a time feel like enormous. They're like way cooler than us are just now disappeared altogether. So
really sad. So yeah, what would your advice be to someone who's just cresting now and making it in music to stay level-headed, to not ruin their lives?
For one, so don't bleep this. My number one bit of advice to everyone is don't be a dick. Because
I love it.
And that applies to all walks of life really, but it's not hard to be nice. And especially people who say, like, if you're, say, on TV or festivals, like, anyone who's, like, say, like, a runner or, like, lower down the pecking order, most people have higher ambitions in their lives. Chances are, in 2 or 3 years' time, they're not working there, they're going to be working here. And you hear stories of, say, bands who are, like, nice to people on the way up. When they're on their way down, someone who is down here is now there and will give them a helping hand.
And it's they like, remember.
Yeah, it's yeah, like, yeah. You didn't have to be nice to me that day. But
well, they say be nice to everyone on the way up because you're going to meet them on the way down.
Exactly that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also, you can build a reputation across 10 years. You can torch it in 10 seconds is the other bit. So even on a bad day, you can still be courteous. You haven't got to be rude to anyone. Yeah, you can be firm, but you haven't got to be like rude.
No, I completely agree. And do your family keep you grounded? Because you're married to youngish kids.
Yeah, boys are 9 and 7 now, yeah. So
yeah. Do they keep you grounded or do they think you're the superstar dad?
Keep me busy.
Keep you busy. Well, doing the school run. And
I'm the chaperone, the laundrette, the cook. No, it's good. I mean, honestly, I don't get a lot of smoke blown up my ass as it is. So I don't think I need to be kept grounded. But also, especially like when I met, say, like some of the parents at school, that was like just coming out of COVID. So I met them at the school gates and we went touring for ages. So I was just like another dad on the school run. And then when we finally did a show in Brighton, they were like, I felt a bit overwhelmed. It's like, I didn't, that's matey from the school, not in the band. Yeah. It's very, very surreal sort of seeing me kind of like, I look more out of place on stage to them than like day to day.
Yeah, I get that. And so I sort of mentioned earlier that I kind of met you through your dad, who volunteers at a food bank charity. Do you support any charities yourself? Did I read you supporting an anti-bullying thing?
Yeah,
right?
So Ambassador for the Anti-Bullying Alliance, who my friend Martha heads up. So part of that, but also, yeah, like Fair Share as well. I've done a couple of bits with Dad occasionally, but yeah, he's found his new sort of calling with that.
But he's a lovely bloke. I'm not just saying that.
Oh,
he really is. He's a nice guy, and I can see why you're so grounded and steady.
It wasn't until he took me down there, and Shelley and everyone sort of showed me around at the unit, just the level of demand is frightening. Like, we're meant to be one of the again, get onto politics now, whatever, but like we're meant to be have one of the biggest GDPs globally. The number of people living under the poverty line, not through laziness, not through anything like that. It's just the cost of everything's gone up. Like wages have not come with it.
No, absolutely.
And there are good working people who
imagine.
Working people.
It's not as you'd imagine someone who's not got a job even. There's paramedics, nurses using food banks. I mean, that is, in a developed country, is outrageous.
Unforgivable, in my opinion. Yeah.
So if you don't mind me asking, what was the experience? Do you have a personal experience of bullying? Is that why you support that, or is it a connection? Why do you feel
it's
so
just
passionate?
Purely through my friend. So like, she's quite senior in the charity and basically was like, I'm going to use your platform. Hope that's okay. It's like, but by all means, it's a good cause.
Well, it's nice to do something positive with your...
Well, it is, but also, like, I mean, we, like, through the band over the years, like, meeting people, it's amazing, like, with music, how, obviously not legally speaking, but, like, once a song is out there, it's not entirely yours anymore. It becomes, like, the soundtrack to, say, someone's holiday or wedding or a bad time or a breakup. Yeah. It's like, music, kind of like smells, can trigger a memory or a place.
Yeah.
But also, like, met some people who went through some really hard times. Again, that's quite a humbling thing. So I always remember this girl who we met in San Francisco, who said her twin sister had very bad mental health issues and got sectioned, and part of her treatment was like, just can't be in contact with the family for a while. But the sisters were like, every night, 7 o'clock, I'm going to push play on the Bastille album. So we're hearing the same thing at the same time. And we were just like, oh my God, it's just these daft songs we made. We didn't realize it was going to take on some other
meaning,
importance. Yeah. But then this isn't the reason solely why I was doing this charity, but like, you meet people who have gone through bullying, like self-harming issues and identity crises and all these sorts of things. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm very fortunate to be like in a sort of happy place in life. So yeah, anything we can do to help others who aren't, then yeah, we should.
Well, that's lovely. I'm really glad you're using it for those reasons. We talked about you being from Devon and you're down here today for a reason I'll come on to in a moment. But when you come back to Devon, where's the first place you go? Where do you love? Do you still go for a pint and a pasty somewhere? Or?
Yeah, I mean, pub of choice these days is Rome, just like around the back of Mutley.
I live next door.
Do you?
Well, practically. I'm a minute away. Yeah, yeah.
All right, well, I'm actually going there after this, so yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, I'll give you a lift.
Thank you. But yeah, just the usual sort of tick boxes, I guess. Again, it's like when you don't realise how much you miss it until you leave. So, I mean, I haven't lived down here now for going on 20 years, but it's still like, you want to go see the Barbican, go down the hoe, all those sort of things. Argyle, obviously. I'm a diehard Argyle fan.
Well, I was going to come on to that. That's so you arrived wearing a scarf.
Yeah.
And in our little pre-chat, you told me you did see the Liverpool game.
Yep. So
that was pretty traumatic, wasn't it? I mean, fantastic, but 9 minutes of extra time.
I brought my eldest down, who's 9. I think this is, what, 3 days later? I think he's only just calmed down now. I don't think he's quite experienced that level of like anxiety and stress before.
I just
and tension.
Oh, it's just too exciting. I'm actually, after this podcast, I'm going to Argyle. I'm watching the Millwall game. So.
Same. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, yeah, Argyle's a big thing for me. And especially when I've got a lot of friends from school who have since like moved either up country or abroad even. Like Argyle takes on a whole like sort of wider meaning. It's like when they're doing well, it's like sort of a bit more of a connection to home almost when you're further away.
And they've got Man City next.
Who?
Who? Some small club. I think we've probably heard of them.
Yeah, yeah.
The stat that came out that I loved was, I don't know if you heard this, 3 of the top players that Liverpool fielded, their transfer fees are more than Argyle has ever spent on players in its entire existence.
I also heard since New Year, at time of recording, I should stress, Argyle have beaten more Premier League teams this year than Championship teams.
Well, that is true, because they haven't had a good run in the Championship, have they? I'm hoping they'll stay up. You've got your own podcast. Thank you for joining me on mine.
That's a pleasure.
Little old Devon Chamber in conversation with. But what's your podcast about?
My podcast is called Away Days with Woody and Piers, with my dear friend Piers Hewitt from the band Boxer Rebellion. So as I said, I'm an Argyle fan. He's a Southend fan.
We'll forgive him that.
It's fine. I mean, they're suffering at the minute. I wouldn't wish it on anyone.
Yeah, okay.
So yeah, it's about, well, I say it's about, the jump off point is away days in football. So we'll often get on like a fairly well-known guest to talk about like their club, why they follow their club, and hopefully get onto more anecdotes about like their worst away trip, the worst pie, all the best ones. And then it's almost more kind of football adjacent than, we're not discussing like VAR or the weekend's games. It's more just kind of like fan culture. Yeah. But we've had Fatboy Slim.
Have you?
So he's obviously covering Brighton. Chris from Muse, massive Rotherham fan, believe it or not. Who else we've had? Like Ross from 1975s, Macclesfield Town fan.
Yeah.
So we're about 22 episodes in now.
Yeah.
And it's been really fun.
Yeah.
And we're just going to keep rolling with it, and just me and my silly mate sort of making podcasts.
Is it just for fun, or is it a commercial thing? Or?
Well, eventually it'd be nice. It's a nice sort of palate cleanser, because I mean, I work in music. I love music. But sometimes it's good to have something outside of it just to kind of clear your head and be in a sort of different space.
And what's next for you and Bastille? Because you've had an album out called Ampersand, haven't you? And that's gone all right?
It's gone all right, yeah. Well, that was kind of like more like Dan's kind of side passion project.
Oh, was it?
Okay. But Bastille fans hate me for saying this because we say it all the time. There's stuff happening soon. ish.
You're not going to tell us.
On Devon pain of Chamber. Death. No.
No, okay. Okay, well, I tried. Fans out there, I tried.
There'll be a very angry Welsh lady, our manager, Estelle, who will seek me out.
Yeah, don't get yourself into trouble.
Yeah.
And if you could give one piece of advice to young musicians in Devon dreaming of making it big,
yep,
what would it be?
Don't focus on making it big. Just make the best thing that is true to yourself, because people will see through it. Yeah. Also, seek advice or put yourselves in rooms with people who are better than you. If you're not out of your comfort zone, you aren't learning. And I include myself in that. I've been doing this sort of songwriting production stuff the last 5 years. The imposter syndrome is still there, even though I think I'm quite good at it now. But I'm always trying to get into rooms with like better or bigger writers than me or better producers, because then you're learning.
Absolutely. There's an expression, if you're the cleverest person in the room, you're in the wrong room.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. You've got to learn from people, haven't you?
Yeah, and it's just, don't be afraid to reach out. Also, if I heard a friend of mine say about this, like, I think it's like the sort of the 100 rule, where if you just find 100 people who are where you want to be it like artists, producers, writers, whatever, just message them on Instagram or whatever social media platform you want to do, probably 98 will ignore you, but one or two may reply. Just say like, today I'm going to message five. And if you just do five a day, it's just...
Just keep plugging sort of, away. Yeah, do what you do well.
Positive action is like, tried that today, didn't work, we'll go again tomorrow. But as far as like making music, you can always write a better song. Always, always, always. In the more pop world, if you write in a chorus, the chorus is for the listener. The verse is for the artist. So yeah, don't make the chorus too difficult. And yeah, sort of check your ego at the door.
You need sort of like an anthemic sort of...
Maybe, yeah. Teletubbies inspired, yeah.
Does that make you... Like, are you still happy about it? Or do you hear it and go, oh, I'm bored of that song or not?
Nah. So, I mean, that like changed our lives, that song. And like, you'd have to be dead inside to not enjoy the sort of reaction that gets.
It's joyous, isn't it? Yeah. It's joyous. I can't believe time's gone already, but I've got one last, final, really serious question. Speaking of young musicians as we were... Is it too late for me to take up the drums and become a rock star?
Never.
Never too late?
Never, ever.
Brilliant. You heard it here first. Stuart Elford, next drummer of whatever the band's called. I'll have to come up with, when was I born? 28th December. I don't think much happened on that day. We'll have to look into it.
That bit in between Christmas, New Year. Yeah.
Twixmas or whatever it's called.
Twixmas, yeah. You can call it that.
Hey, look, I'm really genuinely grateful for you taking the time to come and speak to Devon Chamber and our listeners. And it's been a genuine joy. And I can tell in the nicest possible way your dad's done good, because you're a really nice guy and you're really grounded and down to earth.
Thank you.
And thank you for using your voice for positive stuff. And please keep promoting Devon. We've got a lot of good stuff happening down here.
Yeah, I do. I promise.
Including Argyle.
I never shut up about it. Everyone's sick of me talking about it.
Great. Well, thank you very much. Woody from Bastille.
Cheers.
In Conversation With is supported by Westcott's Chartered Accountants and Business Advisors, helping you go digital and choose the best approach for your business. Westcott's. We're here. Produced by Fresh Air Studios. Full audio and video production services for business podcasts and corporate events. Visit freshairstudios.com. Presented by Stuart Elford. Produced by Paul Philpott. Edited and mixed by Martin Burgess Moon. Video production by Mark Stevenson. Production support by Lisa Hartwell. Copyright Devon Chamber and Fresh Air Studios Limited. All rights reserved.